You're listening to Bedroom Beethovens, where notable music makers break down stories accompanied by songs and melodies documenting growth through their 10,000-hour journey. And me? Well, my name is Cello, your host. This episode is sponsored by Blue Chew. Say it with us. Blue Chew. Blue Chew is making waves and bringing more confidence to the bedroom by offering chewable tablets that can help men get stronger and longer-lasting erections. That's right, in a chewable form and at a fraction of the cost. Blue Chew is an online prescription service, so no visits to the doctor's office, no awkward conversations, and no waiting in line at the pharmacy, especially perfect in these days of quarantine. And it ships right to your door in a discreet package, made in the USA, and they prepare and ship direct, so it's cheaper than a pharmacy. Listen, guys, the process is really simple. Sign up at BlueChew.com, consult with one of their licensed medical providers, and once you're approved, you'll receive your prescription within days. And the best part? It's all done online. Blue Chew's licensed medical providers work with you to find the right ingredient and strength for your prescription. So if you could benefit from extra confidence when it's time to perform, visit BlueChew.com for more details and important safety information. And I've got a special deal for you guys, a special deal for my listeners. Try Blue Chew free, F-R-E-E, when you use our promo code Beethoven at checkout. You just pay $5 shipping. That's BlueChew.com, promo code Beethoven to receive your first month free. And we thank Blue Chew for sponsoring the podcast.
I am a bedroom Beethoven.
Greetings, all. You are tuned to another episode of the podcast, specifically episode 109. And this week we journey up to Hogtown, the Big Smoke, the Six. You know, Toronto. My guest this week is...
My name is B Child, formerly Slack the B Child. I am a performing producer, songwriter, also produced for other artists. Probably the most famous artists that I produce for is Drake, Justin Nazuka, Divine Brown, Melanie DeBrant, to name a few. And I'm a mix engineer as well.
Beat Child and podcasting. It goes hand in hand like vinyl records and liner notes. So much to talk about as this Juno-nominated artist has been developing his sound for over a decade, and now he's taking a more central role in his music. But as we roll through the gamut and learn about his 10,000-hour journey, we halt, dig our heels in the dirt, and land front and center in Nostalgia, a beat tape that spans 12 years and has selected his favorite cuts. Think of it as a goodie bag before we start getting that new music from him this year. These instrumentals let Beat Child's natural musical aesthetic breathe, reframing his warm, uncluttered productions and letting his smooth, blunted, soulful beats speak for themselves. Before I let the conversation rip, though, mind lending me your ear for a minute? I got something cool to tell you. Patreon.com/bedroombeethovens is set up, it's live, and if you like what I'm doing, the hard work, the persistence, and you're thinking, how can I show Cello my love? Well, that's the best way to do it. A few bucks and you get ad-free episodes early and a few other perks. As always, social media on Instagram, Bedroom Beethovens, Twitter is Bedroom Beat Pod, and the website is bedroombeethovens.com. That's it. Plugs are done. I'll get out of your way now. Beat Child 109, Bedroom Beethovens Podcast. Yes, sir. I noticed you mentioned Drake, and you know, a decade and some change later, is it even on your radar to eventually work with him again, or has his mainstream success, as it grows, is there a divide that grows along with that? Maybe he's harder to reach. Maybe the type of music he makes now doesn't fit in with your production style.
Yeah, I think we're on such different trajectories. We had different goals from the onset. Like, I mean, from the day we started working together, you know, we talk and we really get into it. And it's like, we knew that we had different goals and different values, but we got along. We both appreciated each other's talent, you know. But as far as another collaboration, I mean, I think I have better odds of winning the lottery than that happening. But I mean, if it happens, it happens.
Yeah, I just think, like, why does someone like Drake get put on, but someone like Ibrahim doesn't? I listened to him yesterday. The guy's amazing. And I get sad when sheer talent doesn't translate into mainstream success. Like, there are so many other factors that go into it, right? I mean, at one time he had Britney Spears' attention, and then you have momentum.
Right.
And it's like, well, damn, why didn't it happen?
I have a lot of theories on that. And I don't even know if this is, if it's like even worth getting into. But I mean, if you want something bad enough, you will get it. And if you're smart enough, you will figure out a way to create a strategy. And I think it's as simple as that, right? It's how bad you want it, how clever you are at reaching what you want to get, you know? Like, there's no secret. The secret is no secret. you put it out there, and you will get it. But it depends on how bad you want it. And, you know, from working with both of those artists, they're completely different people as far as their mindset when it comes to business, when it comes to hustle, when it comes to desires and intentions in this world, right? So, but I will say this too. Drake is definitely a unique individual. And I knew that from like early on. There was always something different about him and the way he went about getting what he wanted. And it always reminded me of, like, you know, these CEOs who they just have a vision for something and they get it at whatever cost. If people get left or trampled on the way, that's like collateral, and it's for the bigger purpose. So whoever you capture in your prime, that's who's going to stick with you. And if you have more momentum and if you have a bigger reach, you're going to reach more people.
Well, how easy or hard was that coming from, and I don't want to mispronounce the town, is it Sarnia?
Yeah.
Was that a great hub for music and art? How about this? I've had on some producers from Canada. And mm-hmm. They love Canada. They have Canadian pride, but they always leave. And I'm always wondering, like, will it take a place like Sarnia? Will it ever be a great hub for music and art if the people who can make it one leave?
I think there's a lot of great talent that's come out of Sarnia. But as far as it being sustainable, there's no sustainable industry there. With any industry, you have to go where it's sustainable. You know,
what's the population there? Is it a large city or a small city?
It's like 80,000 people, right?
Oh, so that's not bad.
Yeah, but you can't make a living off of music in a city where there's no industry, right? So, like, a lot of these guys, when they leave, the reason why they leave is they'll take a trip to, say, like LA, or even like the Toronto if you're in a smaller city within the same country. And the amount of connections and the amount you get accomplished within a very small period of time is almost overwhelming. And you quickly realize that there is no way you can be competitive in a sleepy town, right? So getting out is really crucial.
And how was it when you showcased your music to people in that area? Were their reactions enough for you, or were you just like an alien? Were you just ahead of your time and people couldn't appreciate the progressive music that they were hearing?
It wasn't on that level, right? Because there just simply wasn't enough going on for that to happen. I mean, it happened on a really small scale. I can remember a few times where someone would be like excited to have discovered me or someone I performed. They're just the population density just wasn't there, right? And not only that, the opportunity for collaboration and networking was non-existent.
So where did you settle? Because I think you bought a home a few months before the pandemic hit.
When I realized that I needed to get out, like, you know, a lot of the producers you've interviewed, I decided to make a move for Toronto, the capital of Ontario. And it's like the music hub, you know, the entertainment hub for the country. I think a lot of other cities would, you know, they don't like to hear that, but, you know, a lot does happen in Toronto.
And now it's like you have to think a little bit bigger than yourself. You know, if you have a son and this is the place where you live, this is the place where you hope it feeds his soul and he has the creative environment to follow in your footsteps if he so chooses.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, one of my biggest goals was, you know, to make sure I have, I've always wanted children. I have a son and a daughter. But, you know, I have the studio at home now. It's nice because I've been able to slowly make progress into a place where I can be creative and work on the goal and continue to work on the goals. But like you said, provide an environment for my children to explore music and explore creativity. And what's cool is like they're doing things creatively at such a young age that I wasn't doing. And so it's really cool to see that they have a much earlier head start than I had. And I'm really excited about like where that's going to go and where they're going to take that.
Yeah, I have a 9-year-old and a 6-year-old. And
okay, right.
I have a fear. And I know that you believe that art stimulates a part of your brain that's undervalued. But I had a fear that, and it's actually come true. My oldest is what I would call a left brain child. She's analytical. Mm-hmm. She likes numbers. Mm-hmm. Not everyone connects with music. Not everyone's creative. And
yeah,
I don't know. I think about this sometimes, like, you know, maybe if Beat Child wasn't such a creative outlier, maybe you would have finished architecture school. Even your teacher, recognized that you didn't belong there.
That's it, man. You know, and I still love design. I still, like, I'm a nerd. You know, I'm a closet aviation freak. I'm working on getting my pilot's license. But the music calling is much louder than all of those things, right? And there's only so much time in the day, so I have to focus on one thing. And for now, it's music. But you're right. You have to kind of do what speaks to you and not do it from an external place, but from an internal place. Like, do it for yourself from the core, because that's when you will be truly fulfilled. I'm always trying to be careful not to push music onto my kids, you know, not to be like, okay, you are going to be musical. I want their passions and their talents, their natural talents to dictate what they want to pursue and what they want to develop. I just want to make sure that, like, I have the tools here, you know, so here it is. But like my son, he's definitely more into math and science and all that too. Whereas his younger sister, she's just all about the music. Like, she picks up beats and rhythms. She beatboxes. She's 2.5. And she definitely has much more of a knack for music, more of a right brain, you know.
Once you're an artist, you can never change it. You can pretend, but it'll never leave. You can go to pottery school. You can go to architecture school. You can have moments where you even want to quit music, but it's always going to be kind of breathing on the back of your neck. It's always going to be kind of nagging you.
I try to leave. I don't know why. I think moments of discouragement. And I think a lot of artists have gone through this. And you're just like, no, you know what? It's time to do something else. And some artists do. They switch careers and whatnot. But I've been fortunate enough to stick it through and been able to make it sustainable. And it's that voice inside. And it's like important to listen to it because it's there. Like, who put that there? Right? Who put that voice there?
Well, so like that, I guess that would contribute to the ambition that you were talking about with that internship. That internship at that studio, was that on Kennedy Road? Was that Phase One Studios?
Yeah, it was Phase One Studios. Yes.
And that is the studio where Rihanna and Herbie Hancock and Sting and Kiss have recorded it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, being in that environment was like, that was a game changer for me.
Did you call ahead? Did you book an interview or did you just walk in with a story and made sure they saw the hunger in your eyes?
Yeah, well, that's just it. I got a connection. Someone recommended it to me, Click. He's a respected industry head out here. And he was helping me out when I first moved to Toronto. And I was so hungry. And I'm like, you know what? I'm walking into this studio and I'm going to do anything. I don't even want to get paid and I'm going to let them know this. And I walked into that place and I talked to the manager, Donnie at the time, and then the owner. And I just like looked them dead in the eyes and I said, I will do anything. You don't have to pay me. I just want to learn. I'll do anything. I was like so hungry and they're like, come in the next day. And I was just like, wow, I did it. And I remember when I walked out, I started walking away from the building, and I did one of those like hop skip things where I clicked my heels in the air on an angle. I was really happy.
That's drive though, you know, is there any plans to open up another cafe once this pandemic is done?
I don't know about that one. I don't know about that one. That was a school. I call that school of the hard knocks. Learned a lot, met some great people. But it's just one of those things that it's probably harder than music.
No, I get it. Owning a cafe is a far cry from being a firefighter or a pilot, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. You've done your research, eh? You've done your research, huh? You go into the weeds. Okay, I'm ready. Let's get into the weeds, man. That's what it's about. I've only done maybe three interviews in my lifetime where I know that the person doing the interview is like talented, you know? Like, it's not just about asking questions. And the art of interviewing is in my opinion is dead. So it's nice to do an interview like this and, you know, have real conversations about reality and not just the same old.
Let's talk about the early influence of yours. And correct me if I'm wrong, but you never hear anyone talk about Wyclef being on anyone's top 100 producer list. But the early Refugee stuff, like The Score, you actually caught the bug from the way he worked.
Yeah, absolutely, man. That I think Wyclef is a genius, you know, and the way he puts together albums, it's like a movie. And although he's not the first to do it, he really definitely he had a knack for it, right? And I think he's one of those producers who has a talent for bringing it, for putting the right talent together and finding like the right people to create a sound. And that album, that's the first album that got me excited about the potential of music.
The knee-jerk reaction when you think of the scores to think about Lauryn Hill, there was something different about her on the album. And then you realize, oh, well, maybe it was the romantic chemistry between Wyclef and Lauryn Hill. Then you realize, oh, Lauryn Hill was his secret lover throughout this period. It was like they knew it wasn't going to work from the start, but they couldn't shy away. You know, Wyclef was married to another woman and was having an affair.
Ready or not, here I come. You can't hide. Gonna find you and make you one.
And it's not that it was wrong. It's just that it was too good to be true. The way they related, they couldn't sustain because it was this whirlwind of creativity, this success, this performance. It was a fantasy that they engaged in because it was almost as if the music and the group and what they were doing drew them in. And because of that, I think Wyclef made his best music. And I think Lauryn Hill was in her best mood. And then that's why she was able to go on and do the Miseducation. I think that's why people don't mention Wyclef in the best producer conversations, because I just think he needed Lauryn Hill to kind of like, I don't know, it was like a mating call. Like he wanted to impress her.
Hey baby, cause I got a lot, oh yeah.
I think I disagree on that, because I think the Carnival is an underrated album too, and she's nowhere to be found on there. You know, yes, it's not at the level of the score, because to have that female vocal synergy is unique, and
yeah,
it's great. She's a great artist, but as far as creatively, I think he definitely held his own on Carnival. And that would have been his first solo effort, right? I don't know much about the Love Circle, but like all those things combined, like you're going to create something special. Like I can relate to moments like that in my career where something is brand new. Something is like, and you're young and you're excited and you have like pent up creativity and then a platform to like go. When the pieces fit and the timing is right, you come up with some amazing stuff.
If people understand the way your mind works on other people's music, they can get a better understanding of you. So can I ask you one more?
Yeah, of course.
Bob Marley's Exodus. Why is that such a great record?
I think it's another thing too, when it comes to realizing your potential and collaborating with the right people. Because Marley's earlier stuff musically was great, but sonically it was very like Jamaica, you know? But when he kind of crossed over, but when he collaborated with like engineers from England and songwriters from the States, like when that type of collaboration started to happen, he was able to create music that was able to reach more people. And it put a kind of like the stamp of timelessness on an artist who was already great, because Bob Marley is one of those artists, you can sit him in a room, and I love working with artists like this, where their voice and the energy that drives the voice is so beautiful that they can say anything and you're captivated. I've only worked with a handful of artists who can do that, and it's something really unique, but he can do that. But you can't just bank on that. You need collaboration to create like those really great pieces of music. And Exodus front to back is a special album. I mean, I love all his stuff, but Exodus is one I really love. And there's another thing too about it, and a lot of the records that Marley put out, was there's it's so simple, like the progressions and and the lyrics, they're pretty simple. It's nothing like complex, but what is complex are the grooves. And to me, that is so underrated, because a groove is what can reach out through the speakers and control somebody's body to move. The lyrics, yeah, that can reach into somebody's heart and affect their heart. But the groove can like physically move you. And that's something that not all artists and musicians understand.
You said you work with a handful of people that kind of had the same effect on you. You've had like a decade or more experience. You obviously know your way around some instruments and you have an ear for this, but then your learning doesn't end. You meet a guy from Sweden. Mm-hmm. What's his name?
Tingsek.
And he opens your eyes to music even further. And I wanted to unpack that a bit. First, I want to know how. Like, if I'm a mechanic that works on Hondas all day and I meet a Ferrari mechanic, and now I'm under the engine of a supercar compared to a Honda, is that the equivalent? Are my eyes and ears being exposed to a whole new world in that sense?
I don't know if you can compare it like that. I think it's maybe something more like you're a chef and you are very proficient in the cuisine of, I don't know, Italian. But then you discover there's a tribe in South America who create this dish that you've never heard of with ingredients you've never heard of, and you try it and your mind is blown because you didn't know that those flavors can be put together.
Yeah. That analogy, I didn't mean to say you're a Honda mechanic. I'm glad you knew what I meant. And then you meet Dio and he furthers that even more. He's another chef in the kitchen and you get like a mentorship from him, and it furthers you even more.
Yeah, well, Dio was one of the earlier guys. Dio was we met in Sarnia. So that connection happened in Sarnia when I was 15 years old, actually.
Oh, so you guys were popping off before Black Eyed Peas. They stole y'all's vibe. Y'all were the art of fresh.
Bro, trust me. Trust me. We've been doing it. Yeah, you know what? I know for a fact that there's many top artists out there who've heard my material.
And then kind of...
they've heard it.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. And it's inspired them in ways. So, I'm honored that it's done that.
Send Beach Child some residuals in the mail. Send royalties.
Yeah.
I hate to say this, but a few months ago, George Watsky freestyled for 27 hours straight and broke his Guinness Book of World Record, though.
Yeah, it happens. It happens, right? But he was the first.
He was the first. Can't take that away.
The Art of Fresh definitely gave me a new vantage point of my own abilities. Every new project I do that has a different sound, it kind of like is a new vantage point looking at myself and what I'm capable of doing. And that was one. It was a really great one. And, we were able to tour a lot and perform. It was super fun. And, I constantly like challenging myself when it comes to like creatively. I'm always challenging myself. And if I start to create music that sounds like something I've already done, it kind of frustrates me.
So if I listen to Nostalgia, you think I'd be able to hear like a bell curve of your confidence from...
I think so. And that's one interesting thing about Nostalgia Beats is I didn't put any details about what appears where. I think I'm too young of an artist to do something like that. I'll wait. If I'm still here in 10, 20 years, then that's where that kind of like, where I can put those details in there of my history. But... the music on Nostalgia spans from 2000, a beat I made in 2001. It does say 2008 because it's about the released stuff. 2001 to just a few months ago. So yeah, I think you should be able to hear a growth, but you won't know what order it's in because it's kind of scattered around.
But what was no accident is that the new tape has mustard, reds, browns, and blacks. That's the color palette of the 70s because it's very influential period for you.
Yeah, definitely. Those colors always, you know, that sticks with me. Because to me, that's my golden era. When I listen to music, you know, any genre, but that was created in that era, to me, has something special. And I can't quite put my finger on what it is exactly that made it special.
I have a little theory. I mean, because you have young kids, so you know, but children's shows from the 70s had intelligent backing music, psychedelic rock, jazz, and now we have Paw Patrol, which is, you know.
Yeah, like the Pointer Sisters, the pinball episode, the pinball thing in Sesame Street.
Oh, yeah.
Like, right? Or even like the intro to Taxi. Or like there's so many, like Mr. Rogers, like jazz, piano jazz. I mean, I think music and intellect go hand in hand.
Yeah, I've been paying attention to that aesthetic since your old logo, where you had three vinyl records that looked like an infinity sign. So I've seen the progression.
Okay. Yeah, you know, I do all my own graphics, so it's like, I'm always trying new things and whatnot.
I love the journey, man. I love that you're on BBE Music because it's the same label that's pulling out Dilla's music now, and it's got to be surreal.
Yeah,
the journey's incredible.
Yeah, definitely, man. It's I'm happy. Looking forward to the world hearing the new stuff I have coming out because Nostalgia Beats is just a warm up.
But if so, let's say this episode comes out. I want to introduce someone to your music. Would Nostalgia be the tape to introduce people to you to get ready for these EPs that are coming out?
It's Nostalgia Beats, right? So it's not like Slack of the Beat Child Essential or what's the other one they call it when it's like your catalog?
Like the collection volume one and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's not that, you know, it's a collection. It's a memoir of beats, so it's specific to beats. I don't think I have if you were to introduce someone to my music, I don't think I have an album that paint a complete picture.
Yeah, because I realize, like, I'm giving people kind of a tunnel vision on one avenue. You know, they know that you used to have another name. You used to have like soul bands, stuff like that. There's a lot of faces to you, and I'm just focusing kind of on one. So I will say, when the EPs come out, maybe come back and we can dive into more stuff. If I'm one of those top three or four interviews that didn't make you fall asleep in your chair.
No, definitely. I'd definitely love to come back, man. And we can even go deeper. We can even dig deeper. Best place to go is beatchild.com. Beatchild.com is where you'll find all the music, all the social links. Instagram is Beatchild Music. But Beatchild.com, that's the place to find it all.
I love it, man. I'm excited for your career in this new year. I really do think that the future is bright. And I know how much you love traveling the world, so I hope that comes back.
Yeah, me too.
It's been an absolute pleasure to learn from your journey and to have you on this podcast. So I do thank you for your time.
Thanks a lot for having me, man. It was a pleasure.